The Al Franken Show is back. Nobody likes paying taxes, but not everybody dislikes paying taxes. Dead rich people, for example, are not capable of having any emotions about taxation. But if dead rich people are already dead, as by definition they are, then why should their tax status be the top legislative priority in a country where 43 million living people don't even have health insurance? This hour, Yale political scientist Ian Shapiro tells the grim story of the death of the estate tax, or, as the anti-government nut jobs in Washington have ordered us to say, the state of the death tax, right now on hour three of the Al Franken Show. Welcome back. I'm Al Franken, and with me, of course,
I'm Catherine Lanford. Ian Shapiro is a political science professor at Yale University, and he is co-author of Death by a Thousand Cuts, The Fight Over Taxing Inherited Wealth. The book traces the mystery of how a tax that's been on the books since 1916 and only affects the wealthiest 2% of Americans was temporarily repealed in 2001 with bipartisan support. He's going to explain all of that to us as he joins us here in the Air America studios. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
When did they start taxing death?
Well, most recently...
I thought that was outrageous.
Well, most recently in 1916. We've had an estate tax for the better part of the 20th century until it was repealed in the 2001 Bush tax bill.
Now, it hasn't been actually repealed, and it's scheduled to be gone by 2011?
Right. There's a... Because
you mean not the tax...
The whole Bush tax bill in 2001, of which this was a part, they didn't have 60 votes to make it filibuster proof, and so they had to do it through the budget reconciliation bill, which it can't be filibustered, but the numbers have to balance over 10 years, and the only way they could make them balance was to repeal the whole bill in 2010. So the big fight now is to extend it or make permanent the tax cuts if they can find the votes to do it.
And the House did this?
The House did it, the Senate did it, and then the President signed it.
How did they manage to
No,
get...
but I mean the House recently has
okay,
passed
so,
a...
Okay, so recently the House again voted to repeal the estate tax, and now a vote in the Senate is scheduled for May.
Permanently.
To make it permanent, yeah. Okay. And a vote is scheduled for next month in the Senate. But again, unless they can get 60 votes for that, that won't be the end of the story. It will just be...
And they won't be able to get 60 votes for
that.
It
doesn't look that way.
Let's go back to sort of the main question, what yep. I saw as sort of the focus of your book. This is a tax that really affects very, very few people.
That's
so
right.
How did it become a bipartisan, politically popular effort
well,
to
it's
repeal
a,
it?
It's a story of an incredibly well-managed plan that was... unfolded over about a decade. And it's very important to understand the plan because even though this is a story of the repeal of, you know, one tax, it's really the playbook that the anti-tax crowd is using to repeal all forms of progressive taxation, all taxation on wealth and income from wealth, and get rid of the tax system.
So there's something to look forward to.
Absolutely, yeah.
Here too, as well.
Last chapter of our book is called Another Storm Gathering, which is about how this playbook is going to be wheeled out in support of the flat tax.
So what are some pages from the playbook okay. that were especially clever?
So the most important thing is to build an effective coalition that has plenty of energy and moral commitment to your cause. This started in the early 90s with people who nobody really took seriously. They seemed quite quixotic. A guy called Jim Martin at 60s plus, who runs a Shing Shu operation. You know, they have their anti-tax Ben Franklin Award.
But, so you're saying they sounded like kooks?
They sounded like kooks. They had Harold Apolinsky, a tax attorney from Alabama. They had Frank Blethyn, the owner of the Seattle Times.
Not a kook?
And not a kook at all, but who has a bee in his bonnet about getting rid of the estate tax because he thinks that otherwise, you know, Gannett is going to buy up all of these hometown
newspapers.
But the
only actual reasonable yeah. argument I've heard,
yeah.
which is that his family owns the Seattle Times. Mm-hmm. And what he was basically saying is that these family newspapers They build up a tremendous amount of value. And then when the patriarch dies and the mom dies too, then the family is forced to sell it. Right. And that was like the only...
They're forced to sell it to a corporation, and it actually damages American democracy and journalism.
But what you have to understand is these people were stalking horses for the real interests at stake here. And they were
billionaires.
And they were so brilliant at getting a bunch of people who in the end were really suckers because they don't really get anything guaranteed to them. Put it another way, if the exemption had been raised to 3 million, which was on offer all the time, it could have been permanent and immediate.
Well, we blew it.
And yeah, but the interesting thing is that these members of the coalition blew it because they rejected these offers time after time. And what was so brilliantly done was putting together very unlikely groups. For instance, they got gays to support, organized gay groups to support this on the specious argument that the estate tax discriminates against gays because they don't get the marital deduction.
At the same time, these people are trying everything they can do to ban gay marriage.
So it's a double sucker in that case.
Yeah.
And they got the Congressional Black Caucus to support it on the grounds that this is harmful to black small business.
Didn't they even use a phrase? Of course, they're going to make sure that this tax stays around because it's the first generation of blacks to make real money.
Well, that's right. They got Bob Johnson, who was furious that that Gates and a few of his friends had run an ad saying billionaires don't want to get rid of the estate tax. He was furious partly because they never consulted him. And he took the view that, this is emasculating the first generation of real wealth to get built up in the black community.
Well, let's talk about why the estate tax is so important. First of all, Teddy Roosevelt is the first to bring it up, right?
Right.
And he's basically saying we want a state tax because we don't want an accumulation of wealth at the top.
Yep.
Now, the estate tax, if we had the estate tax in place for, let's say, you capped you had an exemption of $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
How much money does that raise? And because let's remember, the estate taxes that aren't paid is taxes someone else is going to pay.
Correct. Mm. And the price is sort of underestimated because in the current 10-year bill, it's phased in at the end. So it was $138 billion over 10 years. But if you did for another 10 years, it would be $700 billion. So it's not jump change. But going back to your point about Teddy Roosevelt, you're exactly right that the original justification is that this is not feudal Europe. America is about a level playing field and equality of opportunity. But what is very interesting, and you said it earlier when you said the Democrats blew this, because the Republicans and their allies made moral arguments against this tax that it penalizes work and savings and so forth.
Penalizes the most productive members of our society, the children of the extremely wealthy.
No, but they didn't make that argument. They argued that it penalizes the wealthy, and the Democrats did not put the focus on the children. Instead, they argued about math. They said, you won't pay it, you won't pay it. What they should have pointed out...
You won't pay it to 98% of American people.
Yeah, but people don't respond to math. People respond to arguments.
Well, hang on a minute. Yeah. Doesn't it also have to do with the fact, and this is a curious thing about the American public, but I think it's true. People like to think that they might be there someday.
People like to think that they might be there someday, but even if you explain to them the probability that they're actually going to pay this tax,
This actually sort of ties in with what Al was talking about, that sense of the level playing field in America and anyone can do anything.
Yep.
I mean, doesn't this also sort of link to how the Republicans have been able to make arguments about other issues? You know, what's the matter with Kansas? Part of it is they're telling people, you're going to be wealthy someday because you work so hard. And when you get your turn, do you want this to happen to you? And that's how it turns into a moral question for some Americans.
But, what the Democrats missed was they should have pointed out that, this is the Paris-Hilton Benefit Act. This is not a benefit for wealthy people because, as you said in your opening remarks, they're at this point dead. We're really talking about the... Ne'er-do-well heirs of these people.
But I have the right If I'm to leave it to my heirs.
Yeah.
And but here's the here's the thing. Is that first of all, you can be gifting your heirs as you go.
Yeah.
And secondly, when you earn money, when you make money, when you make a fortune in this country, you are standing on the shoulders of people who stood on the shoulders of people who stood on the shoulders of people who stood on the shoulders, so that you live in this great society that everybody's built. Pay something back.
Well, you know, that's not an argument that was made. As I said, the Democrats were persistently just saying, you won't pay it, you won't pay it. And they didn't make arguments.
You won't pay it to the 98% of people who aren't going to pay it.
That doesn't resonate.
Okay, we're going to take a break now, Ian. Ian Shapiro, who is at Yale University.
Political science professor.
Yeah, but this is one of the top 20 universities I know in the country.
And a little higher than that. He's the co-author of Death by a Thousand Cuts, The Fight Over Taxing Inherited Wealth.
Yes, but Yale's in, dare I say, New Haven. We'll be right back with the Al Franken Show here on Air America Radio.